On this day of reflection and service, a special broadcast as we look at the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. and the challenges this country still faces today. And good Monday morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in on this Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, don't miss it, as our own Al Letson joins the show to discuss race in the River City, an upcoming town hall event. You can get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, did Cole Pepper's Super Bowl predictions pan out? He'll have a look at sports. Plus, a special treat, don't miss it, as we continue our annual holiday tradition here on the show. We'll broadcast Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech in its entirety. That's later in the hour. But first this morning, the shooting deaths of young men in this country, including Florida's own Trayvon Martin and Jordan Davis, have raised difficult and ongoing questions about race and criminal justice in the U.S. Late last year, controversial grand jury rulings in the Michael Brown and Eric Garner cases again brought to light painful rifts in our country, and they focused attention on law enforcement, community relationships, and racial bias. In the aftermath of these events, WJCT State of the Reunion host Al Letson posted two very personal commentaries on his Facebook page about his life experiences growing up in Jacksonville as an African-American male. Letson's posts were widely shared and reprinted in the Florida Times-Union, and they've actually sparked an upcoming event we're proud to host and to broadcast. Letson and WJCT are going to facilitate a dialogue on these sensitive issues during Race in the River City. Now, it's a town hall event that's coming up next week here in our WJCT studios. This conversation will include members of the community, law enforcement officers, experts on race and society, and you. Anyone listening can come on down and be part of it. The goal is to have an open discussion about these issues, allowing everyone to hear the perspectives of others in the community who might disagree, and to serve as a starting point for understanding and change. We've got a preview right now as State of the Reunion host Al Letson joins us on this holiday with his thoughts about race in the River City. Al, great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And on this King holiday, we want your calls. When it comes to race and criminal justice in the U.S., what are your thoughts? What solutions do you see? Give us a call with your thoughts on this Martin Luther King Day. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. You can email and tweet the show. So, Ala, I was struck when I read your commentaries. That first you posted them on Facebook, and then the Times Union actually picked them up and printed them. And, I know you pretty well. I've known you for years. But of course, there are always new things to learn about our friends and colleagues. And you heard some stuff that was very personal and might have taken some aback. Can you talk a little bit about what motivated you to write these commentaries?
Sure. Sure. I mean, I think that the first one was literally I was looking at my Facebook feed. And this is right after the announcement of the grand jury's decision not to further prosecute Darren Wilson.
That was the Staten Island case, right?
Yeah. Actually, no, it was before the Staten Island case.
That was the Ferguson case?
It was the Ferguson case. And so with that, like, I was looking at my Facebook feed and I was really seeing clearly how America, you know, everybody has their own personal version of America that they live in. And I feel like we live in these parallel universes that are in the exact same physical location. And I was just going to close my Facebook account because I just couldn't deal with it. And so out of frustration, I just wrote this post saying that, you know, for my friends who are ignoring this issue, you know me. You know me, and what I'm telling you is that this is the world that I live in. Maybe I don't say it enough, but I need to say it. And so that was the beginning of the conversation. And then I followed it up after Eric Gardner's, after the acquittal in Eric Gardner's case as well. So mostly it was just me being really honest about where I'm at and where I think this country's at.
Yeah, and you talked about what it was like to grow up in Orange Park, and you gave some really specific examples that I think were probably eye-opening for a lot of people, as you said, people who've grown up in Jacksonville but had a completely different experience. Can you talk about some of those specifics?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so, you know, the one thing that when people read the post, I don't want people to think that I grew up in Orange Park, Florida, with my head down and, you know, weeping about the way I was being treated. It wasn't that. It's just that, like, you learn a different way of life. You know, I knew that, like, every Friday and Saturday night in Orange Park, back then, we're talking about the late 80s, early 90s, you know, all the white kids would congregate at the Kmart parking lot. They'd have their big 4x4 trucks. I wasn't invited, so I wasn't 100% sure what was going on there, but I'm pretty sure that they were drinking. And, you know, the police just kind of looked past it. Meanwhile, you know, if me and my black friends were hanging out, there was always a problem. You know, the cops were always breaking it up. The cops were always, we weren't even doing anything, you know. If I was hanging out with my white friends and, like, I was the suspicious one in the group, and I was a good kid, like, I didn't get in any trouble. So, you know, I saw a lot of different things. At one point in my high school, senior year of high school, this white kid put out a hit list of all the black people that he was going to kill. And, you know, I mean, this is a kid who was not going to kill anybody, but still, it was really serious, and we were all freaked out about it. This is the type of stuff that, like, I had to deal with that, you know, I don't think that my white friends even thought twice about, because they didn't have to with it. And it goes, you know, further into, you know, seeing how I had some great teachers at Orange Park High School, two of which are the reason why I do what I do, Miss Brandon and teacher who's now at FSCJ downtown campus, Mr. Combs. They were amazing, and they helped me kind of figure out who I am. But there were also a lot of teachers who, because I was African-American, I just felt like they didn't care one way or the other about where I went. So, and that's from my point of view. Maybe if you ask them, they would tell you something different. But, you know, what I've learned in doing State of the Reunion is, because of our individual experiences, we tend to look at the world differently. And so there's, you know, Pastor Michael Smith with the Church of Jacksonville talks about how, you know, when black people look at the world, they look at it from the lens of the way they've been treated. And when white people look at the world, it's the same way. So for black folks, a lot of things that happen, it's based on race. And for white folks, it's never based on race. And the truth is somewhere in between all of that. And we just have to work together to get to it. So basically, that's what I was trying to do, is kind of invite my truth into the larger conversation.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment for State of the Reunion's Al Letson on this Martin Luther King Jr. holiday at 549-2937. Give us a call with your thoughts. And so what was the reaction like after you posted these pieces? What was it like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've never had anything go mini viral.
But these did.
These did. You know, so I kind of had a standing rule of my work has been on NPR a whole lot. And because I have this, and what I've learned in that is that I don't respond to comments, either good or bad. Mostly because you can just go down the rabbit hole, you know. Uh-huh. And I feel like I've said what I needed to say, and so when people comment, it's their turn to say what they need to say, and that's fine. Some of the comments that I read, a lot of people agreed with what I had to say, but a lot of people disagreed with it as well. People that I know and, you know, are friendly with, and it's fine for them to have their opinion. I'm not going to engage with people who don't really want to have a conversation. But if somebody actually wants to really, you know, talk about things, then I'm more than willing to listen. I would just say that I'm not going to take anyone's experience away from them, and they shouldn't take my experience away from me.
And that really is the key, isn't it? Validating someone's lived experience.
Right.
You may not agree with their opinion, but as a nation, we need to do a better job of understanding someone else's lived experience.
Absolutely. Like you know, I volunteered many years ago at the Sanctuary on 8th Street, and what volunteering there helped me understand is what poverty is like in America. You know, I think before I volunteered there, I had thoughts about what poverty was, but until I was able to slip on somebody else's shoes and actually walk a mile in it, I didn't understand it. And I think that you know, that's one of the things that we are missing in America today, is that we're not willing to slip on each other's shoes and kind of walk that mile and see what it is. So when, you know, people discount my experience, I would just say that, like, it's my experience. And maybe instead of discounting it, you should try putting on the shoes and understanding it.
And if you're just joining us, of course, it is a holiday. It's Martin Luther King Day. The Jacksonville Parade is going to kick off in about 45 minutes downtown. Maybe you're coming downtown for that or just listening at home. If you have the day off, great. But we still want your calls, because right now we want your thoughts about issues of race on this Martin Luther King Day. How far have we come as a nation? Where do you think we need to go? As we welcome award-winning State of the Reunion host Al Letson to Studio 5, the number to join us is 549-2937. Give us a call. And so with this idea of having these conversations, how did then your columns and your posts about this issue, how did that spark what we are now getting ready to do here at WJCT, which is host an event called Race in the River City, a town hall event?
Sure. You know, both of the posts got a lot of people talking in the city. And, you know, WJCT and State of the Reunion had on the books that we were going to do an event. We weren't quite sure what that event was. But as, you know, the news cycle kind of turned a little bit, you know, I sat down with Karen Fagans here at WJCT, and we kind of talked it through, and we figured out that, you know, we need to have the larger conversation here. And so that's how it all kind of coalesced together and became what it is. I'm not interested in pointing the fingers at police officers or pointing the fingers at anybody. What I'm interested in is having a really good, honest conversation where both sides can really hear each other. And then once we start that conversation, it's sort of like, you know, how do we move forward? How do we actually, you know, facilitate change?
This is going to be broadcast, by the way, in February on WJCT television, and we do want people to come out for this event. It's next Tuesday night here in our studios, Race in the River City, hosted by our own Al Letson. And let's go to your calls right now, 549-2937 to join the show. Celeste in Riverside, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. What a terrific show this morning with you and Al. I just want to say, Al, you ask us to play with our better angels. I'm grateful for the work you're doing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Celeste. 549-2937 to join the conversation here on this MLK Day here on First Coast Connect. Bill in Crescent Beach is with us. Hey, Bill. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listening to Al speak about wearing other people's shoes, I recently saw the movie Black Like Me, and I would like to recommend it for everyone. At least all white people should watch it. I'd also like to point out that Martin Luther King gets all the credit, but civil rights was something that took more than one lifetime, and people need to recognize Jacksonville's own A. Philip Randolph and Henry Moore down in Mims, who died when the KKK firebombed his house on Christmas Eve back in the 50s.
Yeah, 100% right. I mean, A. Philip Randolph is basically the grandfather of civil rights, of modern civil rights in America. One of the pieces that we worked on with State of the Reunion is about Bayard Rustin. And Bayard Rustin was the organizer of the March on Washington, and he organized that with A. Philip Randolph. You know, we have a street here named after A. Philip Randolph. Melissa and I were just talking about it, how, you know, it's something that should be taught in specifically in Jacksonville schools, because we have a street named after the grandfather of modern day civil rights. He was amazing.
Yeah. And in fact, the King Parade will go right by this A. Philip Randolph in just a little while. It's right down the street from where we're sitting here in this studio. A. Philip Randolph from Jacksonville. He organized, correct me if I'm wrong, but he organized the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters.
Yes.
He was instrumental in helping African-American men find well-paying jobs in an era when there weren't that many to go around. This was on trains. Then it was really Randolph who put together the March on Washington. He was older than King. He was sort of the leader. King was much younger then, and he looked up to A. Philip Randolph, who was sort of orchestrating the whole thing behind the scenes.
Sure. Yeah, A. Philip Randolph was the man. And, you know, Bayard Rustin was his deputy director. Bayard did a lot of the heavy lifting because by that point, A. Philip Randolph was much older, and had done, you know, it was kind of time for him to retire, so to speak. So, but yeah, I mean, like, you cannot, it's so easy for us to simplify everything that happens around us. Like, I think that when you look at the civil rights struggle, it wasn't just one method. It wasn't Martin Luther King marching. It was Martin Luther King. It was the NAACP. It was SNCC. It was all these different methods to change the conversation and to move us forward.
And we actually have a clip from Al's show, State of the Reunion, looking at the impact of civil rights activist Bayard Rustin. Let's take a listen.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, the day of the march was incredible. I think probably by 3 and 4 in the morning, we were all awake. We were on the mall. And Bayard had his pad and was doing everything. He was making sure that the sound system was working. The mall is dead.
I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever been so nervous at the beginning. The one thing I remember above all others is the press was around us and they said, Mr. Rustin, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. You said there were going to be 250,000 people here. We don't see 5,000 people yet. Where are they all? I took a blank piece of paper out of my pocket and looked at it. I pulled my watch out and I looked at it and I said, gentlemen, everything is going according to schedule.
And I am standing next to him. And I said to him, Bayard, what are you talking about? He said, I don't know. I just made it up. And sure enough, at a given time, people began to come off the trains and the buses arrived.
What about that trademark?
Do you want to be free?
Yeah!
Do you want to be free?
Yeah!
Do you want to be
free? Yeah!
Around 9 o'clock in the morning, from every direction that you looked, you could see these people coming in cars, buses, on foot. It was absolutely exhilarating. It was mostly exhilarating because the crowd was about 50-50 black and white.
And the place filled up so rapidly. I saw people marching, you know, from, I guess, the train station or wherever the buses were, marching, I don't know, 100 deep or whatever, you know, but each group, they were marching under banners.
And ask you to assemble in your respective groups and begin the march for freedom now.
That's extraordinary, Al. A name that's not a household name, but he was important.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think he was written out of the civil rights histories, mostly because he was a gay black man who, you know, was not in the closet during this time, during the 60s, and even before that. He was just an amazing man. He's totally my hero. Bayard Rustin was, you know, I hope that I will have the courage that he had in his everyday life when it's necessary.
Let's go to your calls right now as we discuss our upcoming event here at WJCT, Race in the River City, 549-2937. Chuck at the Beaches. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Good morning. I would like your guests to comment on something for me. I was like 13 years old when Selma was happening, and if I remember correctly, wasn't it Martin Luther King who set a unique and totally different tone here in America of pacifism and turning the other cheek? I give him the credit for that, and I was just wondering if it really was as I remember it.
Well, yeah, thanks.
The other thing I remember so specifically was that the Freedom Riders had to sign their wills when they got on those buses.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
thanks, Chuck.
Chuck, I would say that Martin Luther King was absolutely a large part of the nonviolent movement.
He was inspired by Gandhi.
Right, he was inspired by Gandhi, but he learned all those principles from Bayard Rustin.
How did Bayard Rustin develop those principles?
Well, Bayard Rustin had long been an advocate for peaceful resolution, even starting you know, back in the, I believe, the 30s when he started working with the, I think it was called the Friends for Reconciliation. And it was led by A.J. Musty, who was, you know, these were guys who were conscientious objectors to World War II because they didn't want to be a part of violence. So, yeah, absolutely. Martin Luther King was a huge part. But I also want to say that, you know, when we talk about the civil rights struggle and we put Martin Luther King on a pedestal, as he should be, we still really need to pay attention to other people. For example, like Malcolm X. Like Malcolm X, no one can ever really trace Malcolm X to a violent episode. Like he didn't condone riots or anything like that. But Malcolm was brilliant. And you know, what Malcolm and Martin were able to do together, even though they weren't coordinating it together, is that Malcolm was able to be the stick and Martin was able to be the carrot. And when you think about the civil rights struggle, you have to think about it holistically. You can't think about it as that, like, just one thing happened. Martin Luther King was able to make a way because he was nonviolent. No, you have to think about it the way we did it through the court system, the way Martin did it, the way Malcolm did it. And then afterwards, the Black Power movement and all those things that came into it. Like we get, you know, when we talk about the civil rights struggle, I think that people become uncomfortable when you point to the Black Panther Party or when you point to Malcolm X. But the things that those individuals did were just as important as the work that Martin Luther King did. Like it all kind of came together, coalesced in this beautiful way to get us to a point in history where now, you know, we have moved forward, but we still have so much further to go. That to me is the biggest message of this day, is that the way you remember and honor these people is not by putting down the fight and thinking that it's all done. I mean, we can clearly see that in America, there are huge gaps in our understanding of each other. So that means that we've got a long ways to go before we actually reach the quote unquote promised land.
And that is why we're hosting this event. It's Race in the River City, a special town hall event at WJCT hosted by our own Al Letson, a special opportunity. This is coming up next Tuesday evening at January 27th, 8 p.m. in our studios. We want you to join us and let your voice be heard. Tickets are free, but seating is limited, so reserve your spot now. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m., and this event will be recorded and air on WJCT television next month. So go to wjct.org/events and get your ticket now for Race in the River City. Al Letson, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And still to come, Cole Pepper breaks down the action from last night's championship games as the Super Bowl teams are set. Did his predictions pan out? Find out later. And don't miss it as we continue our annual tradition of listening to Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech in its entirety. That's coming up.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about The Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
We play all your favorite oldies every Monday night at 10. Join us for Route 66. Tune in, flashback, 89.9 WJCT-FM, Monday nights at 10.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wildcrats live on stage at the Florida Theater, February 16th at 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. Watch the Krat Brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet...
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's DEEMABLE.com.
And welcome back. Well, last week, our very own Culpepper made some bold football predictions. And right now, let's find out, how did he do?
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
It's a split decision for Culpepper. Happy Martin Luther King Day, Cole. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Yeah, let's start with college football, where last week I predicted a big blowout win for Oregon.
Yes, you did.
The national title game. Didn't exactly pan out. Ohio State scored 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns to put Oregon away 42-20. So let's just leave that one aside. For
nobody me. Bets 1,000.
Well, I mean, we could just push that aside.
That's right.
We're into the NFL, the heat of things here in the postseason. I predicted that we would have a Seahawks versus Patriots Super Bowl matchup.
Yes, you did. Good job, Culpepper.
You know, you gotta every now and again you pick a favorite and look what happens.
I know, but you know what? Can I just say this right now? Yawn. I'm sorry.
Well, for the NFC, on the AFC side, no doubt.
No, the games were great to watch, but again, with the Patriots, really?
Well, yeah.
Again, like, I'm not excited about watching this at all.
This is what's remarkable about the Patriots and now making a sixth Super Bowl in the Belichick-Brady era.
Uh-huh.
If this was something that you'd have somebody, you know, you think about all the Yankees in the 50s and 60s were dominant the whole bit. Well, here we are in the era of free agency and salary cap, and the NFL is programmed, although don't tell Jaguars fans this, to help the bad teams get better and knock the better teams down, and yet the Patriots are there.
There they are.
All the time, and it really goes to when you get a great quarterback and you have the right system, things can go in your favor in a big hurry. The Seahawks almost ruined my prediction, by the way. They trailed 16-0 at home to Green Bay at one point, and Seattle quarterback Russell Wilson had tossed 4 interceptions, but they're the defending champs.
They are. And the whole time we're watching that, I'm thinking, I like living in a state with lots of sun. As great a city as Seattle is.
Yeah,
and they got an open dome.
They have the open air there, and great fans. I mean, it goes back and forth. Where the loudest place in the National Football League is either in Seattle or in Kansas City. They have this kind of ongoing competition to see who can get louder. But Seattle came back and certainly had a reason for celebration. They scored a touchdown with 2:09 remaining to make it 19-14, then recover the ensuing onside kick. All Green Bay had to do was recover the onside kick, and they would have been off to the Super Bowl. They couldn't do it. Marshawn Lynch then runs it in from 24 yards out in a 2-point conversion. The Seahawks led by 3. They had scored 15 points in 44 seconds. Green Bay kicked a late field goal to force overtime, but in the OT, Wilson, who hadn't thrown a touchdown all game, completes back-to-back 35-yard passes, including the game winner to Jermaine Kearse, and so the return trip to the Super Bowl for Seattle. And some would say, well, let's see. You know, if the Patriots are boring going back 6 times in the era, here's twice in consecutive years for Seattle.
Yeah.
And this is not a Super Bowl that is going to be full of underdog and Cinderella
not
stories.
Not at all. It's 2 Titans going at it.
These are the big dogs, and the betting line certainly would back that up. It opened, for entertainment purposes only, at 2.5 points Seattle favorite, and in a matter of minutes, it got bet down to a pick'em game, which is where it is now. So a flip of a coin to see who's gonna win. The Patriots, you mentioned, no problem.
Total blowout.
Just blew out the Colts 45-7. So 6th quarterback opportunity for Tom Brady in a Super Bowl. That's a record. And he'll try to tie Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw as the only quarterbacks with 4 Lombardi trophies. There is, by the way, a little bit of controversy out of that game.
What's that?
The NFL is investigating this morning whether the Patriots had taken too much air out of the ball. We're playing with a flat ball.
Really?
That may have impacted the way the game was. Now,
what?
You know, you would think this is just a silly thing. But the Patriots have this history with Spygate and so forth of having taped opposing teams' practices. And
yeah, they're kind of known for the dark arts.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. Sort of Belichick, a Sith Lord, perhaps.
Exactly.
So we'll see what comes out of this. This is a team that's always looking for the extra edge, and that's part of their success as well. So Super Bowl 49, 2 weeks from yesterday in Glendale, Arizona. No team has won back-to-back Super Bowls in 10 years. The Seahawks will try to do that.
You think they can do that?
Can they? Of course. Absolutely, they can. Will they? I'll wait till next week to make my pick, but I'll tell you there's an interesting sort of historical connection here. The last team to win back-to-back Super Bowls, Tom Brady's Patriots, when they beat the Eagles here in Jacksonville.
Who can forget that?
In 2005, yep. Yeah. So I'll make my pick next week on that front.
And we'll be listening. Meanwhile, you were in the thick of things as the eyes of the world, actually, were on Jacksonville because of, not football, soccer.
Yes, football. so the Florida Cup was held at Everbank Field over the weekend. The first two matches played in Orlando on Thursday drew about 3,000. The matches Saturday here in Jacksonville were attended by over 7,000, which is not an enormous number when you think about 52,000 in there for the U.S. men's national team. But there are four pro clubs, two from Germany, Bayer Leverkusen and FC Köln, and two from Brazil, Corinthians and Fluminense.
I'm glad you're pronouncing those, not me.
I had a lot of practice on
yes,
that.
Yes, yes.
Great atmosphere, though, especially coming from the Brazilian fans. This should be a good bit of exposure for the city as well. The broadcasts were seen in 125 countries, including some of them who heard my voice. I was asked to provide English language play-by-play for matches. Yeah.
You, Culpepper, now are broadcasting to how many
countries? Well, I don't know how. My broadcast went to back to Germany, where the Bundesliga, the German soccer league, has a distribution of an English language portion of the broadcast. So I don't know how many people
But can we now say that you are internationally renowned broadcaster Culpepper?
I'm internationally known.
That's right. Yep. You are internationally known. Our own Culpepper. We can say we knew him when, Sean Birch. He's nodding at me.
Yeah, it's kind of a big moment for everybody.
It's a big moment. Kudos to you, Cole. Seriously,
you.
No, that's huge. It's a big deal.
Yeah, well, and it's good for Jacksonville, too, because it just gets a lot of attention put to Jacksonville as an emerging city in that regard. And I had an interesting conversation with Rick Catlett of the Gator Bowl Association last week on Friday. And he said that this was a something that he's seeing. He thinks soccer can be the thing, you know, right after football in terms of bringing big events to Jacksonville. This could be a really rich area for Jacksonville to gain more attention, to bring visitors in from out of town, and to spur economic growth.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, the Armada signed some local players to their roster last week too, right?
Yeah, two who played high school and college soccer in Jacksonville, Nerdon Rustic, who starred at Wolfson High School and JU, and Tommy Krasanovich, an Englewood High School grad who also played at JU. The other one is an 18-year-old from Orlando, Nico Zaldana. That's local when you compare it to signings from, you know, England and Argentina and Mexico. The Armada now has signed 10 players. They expect to have around 23 signed by the start of the preseason, and the club's inaugural match is coming up just 19 days away on February 7th against the Philadelphia Union of the MLS.
Very exciting, and of course you can catch Cole on those live television broadcasts on the CW. Thanks so much, Cole, for coming in on this holiday. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
And we'll be right back as we listen back to Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, so don't go away.
Join WJCT Tuesday, January 27th for an open and honest discussion hosted by State of the Reunion's Al Letson that brings issues of race and justice to the forefront with hopes of understanding and change. Go to Race in the River City under WJCT.org/events.
On the next Fresh Air, Eric Foner talks about fugitive slaves and the Underground Railroad, which helped them escape to freedom. His new book draws on a little-known document written by an Underground Railroad operative in New York City.
It's really a very rare first-hand account of these fugitive slaves, who they were, where they came from, who their owners were, how they escaped.
Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Listen to the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra every Monday night at 7 on 89.9 WJCT for the Concert of the Week.
Welcome back. Well, we're going to close the hour now with a special treat. It's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech in its entirety. That speech, of course, was delivered on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial on August 23, 1963. Now, the King Parade is kicking off in just a few moments at Everbank Field. If you're coming downtown for that, be advised that there will be some traffic. And we really appreciate you listening today. Diane Rehm is up next with a special rebroadcast of her hour-long conversation with former New York Governor Mario Cuomo. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you've been listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Right now, sit back and take a listen to a special treat, the I Have a Dream speech, in its entirety. Enjoy.
I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro has still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, A check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. Yes. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hoped that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must be able to conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote, and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. Yes. I have a dream that one day, yes, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.